Wisconsin schools are facing threats both old and new. Beloit Public Schools were closed today, while the Janesville School District last week said that it has been the target of yet another ransomware attack. Now, these cyber attacks on schools have been on the rise in the past few years. Schools are a target because of their access to useful data like addresses and social security numbers, among other reasons like aging technology. We're talking about the recent cyber attacks on Janesville School District and the threats against schools more generally. And we want to hear from you this afternoon at 1-800-642-1234. Has your school district ever been the subject of a ransomware attack? What about yourself? What happened? What do you think can be done to boost school cybersecurity? What do you think schools get right, and what do they get wrong? Our phone number to call in is 1-800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Madeline Fox is the K-12 education reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio. Maddie, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me again.
Yeah, before we get to what happened with the Janesville School District last week, let's start with what's happening today with the Beloit Public Schools. What do we know?
So what we know is that school was canceled today because there is a planned protest actually right about now at 3 p.m. outside of the school board building. My understanding is that it's being organized by the Wisconsin chapter of the Proud Boys, which is an organization that defines itself as supporting free speech and patriotism, but it is actually listed as a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. And that protest is a response to an incident that happened in a classroom in Beloit last week. And we have kind of mixed reports about what happened in that classroom, but the student and his parents say that the teacher taped his mask to his face after he wouldn't wear it. The teacher says something different. Some students in the classroom say something different as well. And the Beloit Police Department investigated, and they say that there's no evidence that any crime was committed.
Do we know what led to the decision to close the schools today and what that mean going forward yet, Maddie?
I think it was an abundance of caution. In the Proud Boys, you have a reputation of being, you know, at best a little in your face and at worst a little bit violent. And so I think it was just a concern that the school district just didn't want to potentially expose any teachers or students to that.
Keeping an eye on what's happening in Beloit today, what's not happening with their public schools closed. And now looking at the latest story from the Janesville School District, which announced a ransomware attack early last week. What do we know about what happened, Madeline?
We know a little bit and not a lot, which is kind of the way that things go with ransomware attacks and cyber attacks generally. It can take a while to sort of trace exactly what happened and how. But what we do know is that the school district said that it was hit with something that looks like ransomware over the weekend of October 24th. And that locked the district out of its network and its printers. And then their IT workers found some irregularities in their system's code. And the end result was that it really brought a lot of things to a halt for a solid chunk of last week. And that is actually still having some effect. You know, for example, students were supposed to get their final first quarter grades this week, but teachers were having trouble getting into the online portal to post them. And so those are now delayed.
And as you write in your story at WPR.org, Madeline, this is not the first time that Janesville schools have faced an attack like this. I believe it was 2018 where something similar happened to their IT.
So actually, that was Kenosha. That was
Kenosha Unified School
District. Yes. But this isn't the first time we've seen this in Wisconsin, for sure.
In fact, how many times have we seen this across the state? Do we have a count of how many school districts and how many attacks?
That's kind of hard to say. So there's specifically ransomware. These are the two that I know of. We did see a lot of cyber events, especially last year when a lot of schools were online, where schools would describe them as hackers, but it's stuff like people got access to a school Zoom room that weren't supposed to have access and dropped in and did some interesting things, or, you know, things have been sent over school email systems that really should not have been sent. So it does kind of depend on how you define these events. They can be anything from phishing attacks to students using email for things that they shouldn't to these actual ransomware attacks.
Madeline Fox, our K-12 education reporter at Wisconsin Public Radio. And Madeline, what is it that makes schools such a sweet target for these cyber attacks? What is it about what they have and how they can cyber thieves can access it?
Oh my gosh. So there's a few things that make schools pretty vulnerable. One of them is that they actually use technology a lot. We definitely saw that last school year and the school year before when schools were doing more of their learning online because of the pandemic. But even before that, you know, schools use computers, use their systems as a companion to teaching in terms of stuff like posting assignments, posting grades. They do online discussions for some classes. And then there's stuff that a lot of big employers do, you know, stuff like employee HR. Here at Wisconsin Public Radio, for example, you know, we enroll in our insurance online, and so do school districts in many ways. So there's a lot of use of technology in these school districts, and they are in many cases, you know, one of the biggest, if not the biggest employer in their area. And so that's a lot of technology that they're using. And it's also a lot of people who have access to that technology. So one of the things that makes them really, really vulnerable is that they have a lot of devices and a lot of people using them, which means that, you know, if you only need one person to have a really insecure password or to fall for a phishing email, the odds are pretty good that that could happen.
Well, one thing you and I have in common, our email addresses that end at WPR.org, and we've all received emails like those that are highly suspicious and dubious. But what do we know about what schools are doing in response to the increased threat of these cyber attacks, Madeline?
Yeah, well, like at our own organization, there's a fair bit of testing and trying to make sure that people, you know, see phishing emails and, you know, they'll send fake phishing emails and say like, oops, you fell for this. Here's how to not do this when it's a real threat. But we also see one of the things that school districts are stressing is phasing out old technology. Actually, in Kenosha's case, this was something that their technology officers talked to me about a lot, because when computers get old, when tablets get old, when printers get old, they can't necessarily update to the latest security update to different patches in the system. And so that means that, like, if somebody wants to break into a system, they can often get in through this older technology because it doesn't have the same capacity to keep bad actors out.
Scott from Menominee called but couldn't stay on the line, was talking about how old systems are in the Menominee School District, and he has tough times just getting through the phone. As you mentioned, does old technology, does that make us more vulnerable?
It absolutely does, yes, because it just, and it's hard too for, you know, teachers who see how stressed their budgets sometimes get to see, you know, getting rid of computers that still work perfectly well or tablets that still work perfectly well. But the thing is, you know, this technology, once it can't get the security updates, once it can't update its virus scanning software or different patches that that manufacturers will often push through as they find vulnerabilities in their system, once it can't get those updates, it's a really vulnerable area.
Madeline Fox, there's a great comment attached to your article at WPR.org about this story in Janesville, which relays the experience of IT professionals. And they say, the comment reads, IT has to understand so many complex technologies, interoperability, security, infrastructure, coding language, and the expectation is that you have to learn them fast and constantly update your knowledge. And the cloud technologies and open source tech move so fast that you're always coming from behind. And by the time you learn it, you have to relearn it. And so that can add an added stress on IT departments. And when they're on call and have to fix things that break, that management may not understand how IT is having to deal with everything that's coming their way in a now, largely remote workplace.
Right. Well, and I was just going to say, on top of all that information that these IT professionals have to work on, they also have to translate it to staff that has very different expertises, right? I mean, people who are hired in some cases because they're really good with kids, which doesn't necessarily mean that they have a really nuanced understanding of internet security.
I was thinking of people like us, Madeline.
Yes, also people like us.
Madeline Fox is the K-12 education reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio, and we'd like to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. What do you think of cybersecurity at your school? And as we move on to the school board elections and the recalls for the school boards, what do you think about those? 1-800-642-1234. Conversation continues coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we're picking up our conversation with WPR K-12 education reporter Madeline Fox. Took a look at what is not happening in Beloit today, the recent news out of the cyber attack in the Janesville schools, and now on to some of the school board recall efforts that we're seeing across the state. Wisconsin has seen recall efforts in 16 school districts over the past 2 years. Most recently, the recall election of the Mequon-Thiensville School Board, and our guest Madeline Fox with the latest on that. What do we know about what took place on Tuesday night at the polls in the Mequon-Thiensville School Board recall race, Maddie?
So in short, the recall failed. You know, Mequon-Thiensville was significant because it was the only school board recall effort to actually gather enough signatures to make it to the ballot in the last couple of years. Even as you said, we saw 16 efforts. This was the only one that made it as far as the ballot. We've got two that are still gathering signatures and could be on a later ballot, but for now it was just this one. And it did fail. And the reason that that's, I think, particularly significant is, I mean, it is hard to recall elected officials, but this is an off-cycle election, right? There's not a president on the ballot. There's not a governor on the ballot. Turnout tends to be pretty low. And so given that this was a recall effort, you might have expected more people who were motivated to turn out to be those folks in support of the recall, because we know people who are unhappy with the status quo tend to vote. But in fact, the four board members who were up for recall all retained their seats at about a 58 to 42% split, which is a pretty commanding victory by the standards of elections.
So what were the issues in play in this recall effort?
That is a great question. So like a lot of recall efforts that we have seen, some of this does trace back to debates over whether and how schools should open in the pandemic, you know, whether that's virtual learning, and then it later became more of an issue of masks, which we saw after the governor's mask order expired last spring. We saw more school boards having to take up that issue of how they would protect against COVID. And that also, you know, lit up some tensions in districts. But what this particular recall effort ended up coalescing around was the people who were pushing the recall say that there's been an academic decline in the Mequon-Thiensville School District. It has consistently been one of the highest achieving school districts in the state. It actually, we get these report cards from the Department of Public Instruction every year, and we did not get them last year because of COVID. They weren't running the same kind of tests and information, so we didn't get them. But the most recent report card that they did have showed that Mequon-Thiensville still really exceeds expectations across the board, but there are some parents who were concerned that there had been an academic decline, and they particularly tied that to the way that race inequity is taught in that school district, what folks around the country are calling critical race theory.
And you spoke with the folks who, the organization Recall MTSD, behind the push for school board members to be recalled in Mequon-Thiensville School District. What have they said to you following Tuesday's results?
Well, they are regrouping and they are not done. They've actually rebranded to Restore MTSD. So I would imagine that we will see, you know, the election was pretty recent, but I would imagine that we will see, as those school board seats start to come up for election, which school board elections or seats are three-year terms, generally speaking, and they're staggered. So usually a whole board is not up for election at the same time, which means that we also tend to get a new election about every 1 or 2 years in every district. So I would imagine that we will see some electoral challenges, which might be slightly different, right? Because recalls, again, don't tend to get quite the same amount of turnout as a typical election. And they're not always as popular as a straight election. So I think that we will see some of these issues certainly come up again in MTSD.
Madeline Fox is WPR's K-12 education reporter joining us this afternoon. And Madeline, our school board elections are supposed to be nonpartisan in Wisconsin, much like our state Supreme Court races are. But we've seen the politicization of our state Supreme Court races, and some are now expressing concerns about how school boards have been politicized. What did they have to relay to you?
Yes. So I think that that's actually such a significant point, the idea that school boards are being politicized, because the thing about school board elections is they are usually relatively nonpartisan, right? People don't register with a party. They don't tend to campaign with a party. But as we know from the Supreme Court, you know, politics can still creep into nonpartisan elections. What people are definitely more concerned about, because it would be particularly more unusual, is the politicization of school boards themselves. And so there is definitely a concern that we might see, you know, a lot of political pressure on school boards, that we might start seeing more partisan politics, especially as we're seeing this push nationally from organizations like the Heritage Foundation, like American Majorities, conservative organizations, this push for conservatives to sort of take over school boards and push concerns about, again, the teaching of race and equity, and again, you know, COVID-19 precautions. There is a concern that that will start showing up at the school board level. And that, you know, worries people on a couple fronts, because they're worried that their kids are going to get caught in these partisan political battles, because that is a school board's job, is really to shape and support kids' education. And so you don't tend to want that to be overly political. I think the other concern that I have heard is that as we see more of these partisan politics come to play in local elections, it might change the kind of people who even want to serve on these boards. You know, we've seen some resignations already in response to these recalls, in response to the very nasty school board meetings that I'm sure you've seen some videos of. And we've seen some superintendents leave as well. And so yeah, there's a concern that as politics come into play more, and as these really vitriolic issues come into play more, it's going to just potentially affect, you know, the leadership, the institutional knowledge, and the actual results that we will have from schools and school boards.
Madeline Fox, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
Homicides are up in large cities across the nation, but Milwaukee's experiencing unprecedented numbers of violent crimes right now. Police say the crimes are being committed by younger people, and homicides are likely connected to the city's car thefts and reckless driving increases. Corrine Hess has more.
Last month, a 47-year-old Oshkosh woman tried to stop four teenagers from stealing a car at a Holiday Inn Express just outside Milwaukee and Wauwatosa. The woman was killed when one of the boys got into her car, pushed her out, and ran over her several times. The criminal complaint contained horrific details that led to a 13-year-old boy being charged as an adult. He faces 6 felony charges and up to 115 years in prison if convicted. The case is extreme, but it's one of the many violent crimes in Milwaukee County where young people are involved. Nick Desiato is the chief of staff at the Milwaukee Police Department. He says teens have easy access to guns, and younger people are stealing cars and driving recklessly, which is all connected.
And while those may seem like a very distinct category, a reckless driver who strikes another vehicle and kills somebody is still a form of a homicide, or the contributing factor for somebody else's death.
At a small business hub in Milwaukee's Sherman Park community, activist Vaughn Mays says when he was a kid, he was committing crimes too, but now the stakes are much higher. At 15, he was doing what he called block banging. Now 34, he says it's still happening, but today kids as young as 12 are using guns instead of fists and posting the violence on social media to gain notoriety.
It's like reality TV on steroids.
One video posted on Facebook Live and obtained by WPR depicts 3 young women dancing and laughing while pointing a semi-automatic weapon at the screen. Sometimes the videos show teens or young people in stolen vehicles driving recklessly through crowded city streets. Mays believes young people have a live fast, die young attitude, which has made everything more dangerous in the city. But that doesn't mean they aren't still kids, many without much family support.
A lot of these kids, when you talk to them, like when they in these cars and they got these guns, they like the most tough person ever. But if you catch them outside of that, they not like that at all. They very scared, frail, fragile, sensitive.
Milwaukee police officials don't dispute Mays's claims. Homicides are up about 32% in large cities across the nation, but Desiato says no city has been hit harder than Milwaukee, which has seen an increase 3 times the national average. There were 190 homicides in Milwaukee last year, the most on record. Through last week, the city was on pace to pass that number. Today's version of block banging can't be blamed entirely for that increase. Domestic violence homicides are up, and Desiato says many shootings are retaliation for previous crimes.
Is this an ongoing thread? Is this something that we can somehow get ahead of and be proactive, whether through the means of law enforcement or through some of our partners?
Some residents and communities, like Sherman Park, are skeptical law enforcement can stem the violence. When about a dozen gunshots rang out one October afternoon, Patricia Norman and her daughter barely flinched, even though the shots sounded close to their quiet, tree-lined street, and they were on their porch.
To me, I don't get scared. I mean, if I feel like it's real close, I know what to, if I'm sitting out here, I know what to run my butt in the house.
Norman moved back to Milwaukee about 2 years ago and loves the city, but sometimes she feels hopeless.
Because if they can't get the guns out these kids' hands, then ain't nothing they can do. Because it don't, and it's not going to stop. I don't see where it's going to stop. And I don't see what nobody can do about it.
A few days after the Oshkosh woman was murdered, a Milwaukee County judge told the 13-year-old the nature of his charges, including first-degree reckless homicide, could not be more serious. The boy told the court he understood, and he wanted to call his mom. Corrine Hess, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Whew. Coming up after the news, it's Food Friday with our returning guest, Dory Greenspan, who's now out with her 14th cookbook, Baking with Dory, celebrating 30 years of helping us in the kitchen. And the recipes are now up on our website at wpr.org/centraltime. I was able to try out a few last night, and I couldn't help myself because they were just that easy. I'm looking forward to hearing some simple, sweet, and salty recipes from you, too, after the news. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Rob Ferret this afternoon, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network.